Welcome to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast.
A classic turn one play. I'm Amy Orr.
And I'm Matthew Orr Bridges. So we have set championships coming up pretty soon.
They're always coming up.
They're always coming. See, that was the trick with me saying that is because anybody could be listening to this at any time. And that phrase will always be true.
Exactly.
So we thought we would dedicate this episode to some advice, maybe aimed at newer players who may not have gone to a set championship before, or maybe who just want to get more comfortable with the game and kind of put names to concepts that you're starting to learn. I know that you have come up to me several times and have been like, hey, so I just figured out, you know, XYZ concept, and I'll say like a jargony catchphrase to in response, and you're like, oh, so people know about that? And I'm like, I mean, yeah, but that's how people figured it out. You gotta play the game and you stumble into a lot of lessons that you can learn just incidentally. Just because somebody else has figured it out doesn't mean that your discovery is any lesser. But sometimes it's nice just to get told, hey, be on the lookout for this thing, and it'll focus your mind, and I think it'll make you play better for some of these bullet points that we have ready.
I'm not sure I enjoy the characterization of myself there, where I sound like I think I've invented something, but
you just had pigtails and like a lollipop, and you came skipping up,
yeah.
And you're like, Matt.
Matt, I really think it might be an advantage to go first.
Matt, so I played a one drop on turn one and a two drop on turn two. And I'm like, oh, yeah, baby's first curve. No, but so I'm sorry. I'm sorry about the characterization. That's not what I meant. But, you know, the curve is a good example. And we did a whole episode on the curve. Go back and listen to that. That is probably one of the greatest pieces of advice when it comes to deck building and also how to think while you're playing. But the curve is a good example of something that you will probably intuit while you are playing, even if you don't know the term specifically, or even if you don't think about it consciously while you're deck building or while you're looking at winning deck lists. You will notice the curve subconsciously, where you're just like, well, I need 8 1 drops, and right now I only have 4 in this deck that I'm building. So, you know, your recognition of I need to fill this 3-drop slot with something is recognizing the curve just based off of your experience so far. Nobody told you about that. You just figured that out. And I think a lot of things fall into a similar category, so to speak.
Yeah. But it's like you said, like if it's pointed out to you, you don't have to figure it out. And that can put you ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah, I mean, I think the entire kind of point of this podcast is, yes, we can all figure out these lessons on our own if we really needed to, because these lessons transcend card games. So there's not going to be a lot of groundbreaking knowledge that comes from any of these card games, but we don't have to do this alone. We have a full community that we can, and a full history of other card games that have, you know, paved the road before us. So we can learn from them, and you can learn from the past, and you don't have to do hundreds of games in order to rise to the level of some of these previous games. So yeah, let's go ahead and dive in. The first one is one that you brought up, and it's something that's a little contentious, like trying to define, as we found out at one of our locals, which I thought was funny, which is win conditions.
Yeah.
As it is jargonly abbreviated to win cons. How did you come by this phrase? Like, who? Because you came up to me and you're like, "Can you explain win cons?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I'll try my best." But
yeah, it's been kind of a roller coaster for me with win cons. Because every once in a while, I'm like, "Oh, okay, yeah, no, I get it." But then I always fall back to, I had to get 20 lore. That's that's how I win.
Right.
No, I think I was watching a stream of somebody playing, and then they're like, "Yeah, it's really important to know your win conditions." And I'm like, wait, what? What
do you Isn't everybody's win condition the same?
Yeah, I think we're all playing the same game. Well, shoot. And they didn't really talk about it at all, because of course it's something that people unlike me have heard of before. And
I don't know that like a commentary stream is really the place to,
oh, that's
to dive
true.
Deep into
for
that.
For sure. But I mean, like, they didn't really address it at all. It was kind of a bomb dropped and run.
It was like a footnote, like, remember your win cons,
yeah, or
like
exactly.
Clippy popping up.
Exactly. Like they didn't follow it up. I'd be like, yeah, this guy's really looking to get all of his items in play so that he can go out in a single turn.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's a good example. You know,
See, I've started to learn things.
Our new player is becoming a moderately experienced player.
Exactly. I can do this.
Yeah. So you've played Sapphire decks. Like, Ruby Sapphire was and still is kind of your main deck that you play. And you've dabbled in other decks. So tell me what you have learned about win cons from your Ruby Sapphire days versus any other deck that you have played or played against.
Sure. Okay. So Ruby Sapphire was maybe like the third deck that I like committed to, and it was a completely different thing, right? Like, it took me weeks of playing to realize I didn't need to be worried when people were at like 15 lore and I was at zero.
And
like the time that I realized, okay, no, it's fine. I'm late game. I just need to delay them until I turn on. That was
a big level up.
Yes, that was when I got comfortable and I was like, yeah, I can do this. That was the biggest difference that I noticed, because before that I was all like, okay, like I gotta be ahead of them, or I gotta at least be keeping pace.
Well, yeah, because you know, and that'll lead you down incorrect kind of decision trees.
Oh, where yeah.
If you're playing Ruby Amethyst or Ruby Sapphire against like a Ruby Amethyst deck, right? Ruby Amethyst has a different win con versus Ruby Sapphire, where Ruby Amethyst is, you know, slowly, incrementally building up an advantage, and, you know, they're questing when they can, they're trying to get card advantage. So, you know, in that matchup, you'll see lore totals slowly climb for the Ruby Amethyst player, and the Ruby Sapphire deck is really trying to stabilize the game. So, you know, we've talked about archetypes before, where are you the aggro deck in the matchup or are you the control deck in the matchup? And Ruby Sapphire is almost always been the control deck. So
which might be part of why I like to play it, is because I don't actually understand when a control deck becomes an aggro deck. Like,
right.
I'm like, wait, what? What am I supposed to be doing right now? I'm racing you?
Different, definitely a difficult switch to flip, you know? But so when a control deck has taken control, that's that corner that you're talking about, you know, or that's that like turning on moment. That's you turning the corner. You are fully in control of the game at this point, and you can just kind of win at your leisure, specifically for like Ruby Sapphire, especially in like the big Tamatoa Lucky Dime days. Your win con was slowly building up a board of items, accruing card advantage, making sure your opponent didn't win before you, and then basically going out in one turn. So, you know, that was your win con, was Lucky Dime Tamatoa. Could you win in other ways? Yeah, probably. You could quest with Sisu a couple times, but that's kind of grindy and not what your game plan was. Meanwhile, you have something like Amber Amethyst Aggro, whose win con is, I'm going to ignore your board as much as possible, and I'm going to try to quest. Yeah,
quest.
Exactly. And so it's like, I'm going to try to beat you as fast as I can before you're able to stabilize. And so that's where, you know, if you go Daisy Duck into Piglet into Lady Piglet, and you're like, okay, I'm at 10, I am presenting 11 on board, or whatever the math is on that.
Jesus.
Exactly. Go. Uh-huh. And, you know, and so like you shorten the game. And that is aggro deck's win con, is to shorten the game, make every decision as weighted as possible on those decisions, and to make sure that you don't have a chance to stabilize. And so that's why, like, Sapphire decks, Ruby Sapphire, probably more specifically, struggle with aggro decks sometimes, is because Ruby Sapphire is a late game win con, has a late game win con. Amber Amethyst has a early game win con, and those don't match up a lot of the times.
Aggro, very obvious win con. Ruby Sapphire, very obvious win con. Where I get really tripped up is those ones in the middle where...
Sure.
Where I'm like, okay, well, you're not trying to brute force like a turn three win, and you're not, you know, trying to go out all in one in turn 10. Right. What are these in the middle doing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to be reductive about it, but it really does come down to like aggro versus control. So let's take Emerald Steel. Like Emerald Steel discard.
That was the next one I was going to say. I was like, that one's actually kind of clear also. Their win con is get rid of all of the other person's cards and then do their thing.
Which, if you think about it, is very similar to Ruby Sapphire.
Yeah.
Ruby Sapphire is kind of playing it on the board where they're being reactive to whatever your opponent is doing. If you play a character, I'm going to remove it. If you play too many characters, I'm going to wipe the board. Emerald Steel does that kind of proactively, where they are setting up discard shenanigans on you. You know, they may do Diablo into Shift Diablo into Sing Sudden Chill, and then the next turn, lay a Prince John and do another Sudden Chill. You know, they're doing it proactively where they're saying, I'm still removing all of your resources, But I can't do that while it's on the board as efficiently as like the Ruby decks can. I can only do that before you have played the card. And then once you are out of cards, it doesn't matter how I win. I just know that I'm going to win. So their win con is the same thing. It's just kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum when it comes to how they go about it. But then you get into decks like Ruby Amethyst. What would Ruby Amethyst's win con be? From my perspective, Ruby Amethyst is a tempo deck where Ruby Amethyst says, I am going to be playing very efficient cards while maintaining card advantage, or at least card parity, right? Think about a lot of Ruby Amethyst's cards draw you an additional card while also being a threat on the board, whether that is Chernabog's Followers, which will be able to quest one or two times before replacing itself. So almost no investment. You didn't have to give up anything, but you have a two lore lead now. Magic Broom is the same thing. Merlin Rabbit is the same thing. Genie is the same thing, where you have these cards that don't require you to invest an actual card into them in the same way that like Ruby Sapphire, if you want to brawl something, you have to give up a card for it. So Ruby Amethyst has this very interesting tempo plan, which is I am gaining incremental value over the course of the entire game, leading to the point where I'm going to be at 15 or 16 lore. And that's when I'm going to pull out the goat bounce goat sequence and close out this game all at once, because by the time I'm there, you are close to stabilizing.
Yeah. Or you're going to top deck a goat and just steal a win.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, that was great. It was, I'm at 19, no cards in hands. You're going to win next turn. Okay. Guess I need a goat. Oh, hey, there's a goat. And you know what? For Amethyst decks, that goat is there 90% of the time.
That's insane.
So, anyway, to round out the conversation about win cons. Wait, did you have anything else that you wanted to say about win cons?
No. I think it remains a little bit, I guess win cons feels to me like there's either a defined one for your deck or you're just getting to 20. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it can feel like that. I think other games may have less blurred lines when it comes to their win cons, if that makes sense. You know, it is getting down a particular card is the way that, well, so take any Jafar list. Their win con is untapping with an active Jafar and hoping that is good enough, right? And you know, if you are playing that deck and you untap and you have a whole new world in hand, you're like, okay, I can probably win from this position. Like, the odds are very likely that I can win from this position. If you're playing against Jafar and they have at least one card in hand and they go, okay, here's Jafar, go, you're like, well, I have to kill that because I don't know if they're going to win next turn. You know, like, that is a very clear win con for the Jafar decks.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, Ruby Sapphire has Tamatoa. You got to kill Tamatoa. Other decks don't have as neatly defined singular specific cards that are going to be win conditions. And maybe other card games do, where it is a singular card. I play this card. If I set it up correctly, then it is going to win me the game. But everything else, win con doesn't necessarily mean a singular point in time. It is the way that you are winning. It is the condition that you are setting up for your victory. So when you are building a new deck, you should be conscious of the play patterns of how you are going to play against other decks while also achieving victory in the end.
A solid summation.
The next thing that we have as a little piece of advice is knowing what is the best thing to ink at any particular moment. And you said that you wanted to discuss this with like no input from me, right?
Ha! Right. Sure.
No. I don't know the answer to this question.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that we put on the list, like, from the very beginning to discuss. Yeah. And it's like, well,
we've been putting
Jesus, I don't know. You shouldn't have anything in your deck that is simply ink fodder. It's just stuff that is good at specific times, right?
Yeah, I've thought about that.
Like, after turn two, I'm pretty happy to see Tipo because he just kind of goes straight into my ink because I'm not interested in losing two more cards to him, you know? But, you know, what I used to do and to some extent still do is, you know, when you open up your starting deck and you see Tamatoa right there and you're like, turn eight. Like, I mean, that's not turn eight because obviously you're talking Sapphire, but that's forever from now. I guess I'll ink this. I'm a little more selective than that now because like if Tamatoa is my win condition, then I can't be inking all of them at the beginning of the game.
Yeah. I think you're tempted to ink the high cost cards immediately, which makes sense, right? You know, it's an eight cost. You can't play it on turn one. You won't be able to play it for a while. Might as well make it useful, you know? Inking is the hardest part of this game, I think. We talked about on a previous episode the curve and mulliganing or altering your hand is like the second hardest part of this game. We finally come back around. This is it. This is the hardest part of the game, is knowing what is best to ink, because there is no feedback for making a mistake with inking. You will a lot of the time alter your hand at the beginning of the game and be like, nope, that was a mistake. I should not have done that. I should have kept, you know, two or three of those cards. This hand that I now have is really bad and unplayable. That lost me the game. You could even have different decision points throughout the game where you're just like, OK, I'm taking a risk on this. And then it doesn't work out. And you're like, OK, that lost me the game. Inking a card is not going to be nearly as obvious that was the point that you lost that game.
Yeah.
And it might not be, you might not acknowledge it at all. It might be something like if you're playing an Amethyst deck and you ink a goat on turn one, and then you get down to that situation that we were talking about before where it was 19 lore, one turn away from going out, and you need a goat. You know, if you hadn't have inked that, then you would have it. You would have a greater chance of drawing another go, you know, whatever. The entire game is different. And that's kind of the point, which is you get pushed into these alternate universes where, well, if you didn't ink the goat, then you would have inked something else. And then that would have had cascading ripple effects over the course of the entire game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
or in the Tamatoa example, you're holding on to it for turn after turn after turn. Are you even getting to it? Who knows? So yeah, it is hard to even know how it impacts you. Yeah.
Well, and I think about, you know, alternate realities when it comes to decisions that I've made in the game, like mulliganing, right? I think about like, oh man, if I had if I had mulliganed one card, you know, it's I'm on the draw. I have my seven. I've already mulliganed. I've shuffled. I've handed it to my opponent. And then I'm looking and I'm like, oh, crap, I don't have a one drop. And I draw my first card for the turn and it's not a one drop. And then I draw my second card and it's a one drop. And I'm like, oh, if only I had mulliganed one additional card, I would have this one drop. Except that's not true. Right. Because you shuffled. Right. And so it's like there are ripple effects that you cannot predict because it is just unknowable. It is just unknowable how you would have played if you had held your Tamatoa or held your goat versus holding on or versus inking it. And you don't know how your opponent would have reacted if you had played a goat on turn four instead of playing a fox on turn three. You know, it's all those sorts of decisions have ripple effects. And so really what it comes down to is one, it's the hardest part of the game. And there is not a definitive answer, I don't think, when it comes to knowing what is best to ink because it is so context dependent. But I think awareness of this is going to be your best ally when it comes to getting better at it. And what I mean by that is don't just look at the Tamatoa and say, well, I'm not going to be playing this for a while. Have an idea of why you are inking it. It's inkable. Go ahead and ink it if you need to. But have an idea of what are the consequences of my actions if I do this? What does the next few turns for me look like? And with the tournament rules, this is kind of going off in a weird direction, but with the tournament rules the way that they are, you're not allowed to take notes if you see like your opponent's hand. You're also not allowed to look at either player's inkwell after they've played a card into it. And so the game does have a lot of emphasis on memorization, which I'm not a particularly big fan of, but it is what it is at this point. So when you're playing at locals, try to remember what you have inked. Don't just ink it and forget it. I think you have to make a concentrated effort to remember what you have inked, because that will inform, okay, I need a goat right now in order to win. And hopefully you have set yourself up to have the best odds at drawing into an out. Or even not even as dire as that, where it's, okay, I see the game going down this particular path right now. I know that we are 2, 3, 4, 5 turns away from the game ending. I need to play to my outs, and I need to play in order to win the game, not just play to not lose the game. And so if you're looking at the board state and you're like, okay, I can quest here, here, and here. They're going to challenge here and here. I can play this, you know, go through the next couple turns, kind of like a chess game, right? I think the chess analogy extends far beyond just the opening play lines, where it is you have to think 2, 3, 4 turns ahead and predict what your opponent is going to do, and also predict the likelihood of what you are going to be drawing. Because that's where the chess analogy falls apart, where we don't have perfect information. We have a bit of randomness and a bit of luck that we have to rely on. And so put yourself into a position where you say, okay, here is the best avenue to victory that I have. And if that includes drawing a particular card, if you know that you are running 4 of that card, but you have already inked one and you have played one, you should be able to approximate the likelihood of drawing one of the other 2. But if you had forgotten that you had inked one, like if I had forgotten that I'd inked a goat, if I think that there are 3, my odds of drawing one are vastly different than what I'm expecting. And so that will lead me down different paths depending on how much information I am able to retain.
Yeah. I can't remember what I ink.
Yeah, no, I know. I it is so much easier to say just remember what you ink than to actually do it.
It's
very difficult because the games all blend together, yes. Especially if you're playing in like a big tournament. And like from match to match and just from game to game where it's like, oh, crap, did I ink a goat on turn one? Was that this game or the last game? You know, like it's very difficult. And like I said, I'm not a particularly big fan of a game testing your memory in that way. It doesn't feel like that's what this game should be about. And part of me kind of thinks that it's a little bit of an oversight with the rules in conflict with like casual versus competitive. In a casual game, it doesn't really matter. You're either going to win or lose, and that's just part of the game. In a competitive game, it's very rare to have this sort of distinction of hidden information that is hidden to all players. But information that was known, I don't know. It feels weird. Best advice when it comes to knowing what's best to ink is think about the consequences of inking something. Consider the fact, and I know that this is going to sound stupid, but consider the fact that you're not going to have that resource. You're not going to have that resource if you do ink it. And try your best to remember what you have inked so that you can take that into account when you are figuring out how to win the game.
And I'll say, ink whatever you want and cross your fingers.
And just, you know, just ink and pray. All right. Well, I think that does it for this advice episode. I enjoyed this episode. I think it was good, and I hope that it's helpful to you and to our 28 listeners. Yeah, we're definitely going to do this again. There's a lot of other pieces of advice we can dive into. So I think it's a good opportunity to make this a sort of reoccurring series, you know? So.
Oh, for sure. This was just like batch one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would definitely be down with doing like several of these and kind of spacing them out and timing them with the release of set championships or DLCs or anything like that. So, yeah, we're going to get out of here. But if you want to leave us a comment, feel free to do so on YouTube at Inka Podcast. You can do it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever. Leave us a comment. Tell us what your best piece of advice is for new or returning players, you know? Tell us what you think.
Yeah, that would be terrific because, I mean, your epiphany could become our epiphany, or at least mine.
No, I think I would. I'm still learning, you know, like I'm not the best player in the world.
Yet.
So, no, I love learning. That's what I love about this game is just constantly learning, constantly growing, and especially from the community that we have, just constantly becoming better. And I think that that's what's great about these sorts of card games. So, all right. Well, we got to get out of here. We have a triple deck constructed tournament that we got to get ready for.
Gotta go practice my Ruby Emerald deck.
Oh, Ruby Emerald.
What?
Oh, God. Guys, she's cooking. She's cooking. We got to get out of here. Can't give away trade secrets, you know? Okay, bye.
And bye.